And we're back. It is the Taylor Report, and we're really glad to be talking to Philippe La Rochelle. Are you there, Mr. La Rochelle?
Yes, I am.
Hey, thanks a lot for joining us. You're talking about this wonderful political leader who has suffered so much, Victoire Ingabire Umahoza. And my understanding is you're a member of her legal team. She has some mountains to climb because she wants to run for the presidency of the country. And the government has, my understanding is, they said, no, you can't do that, violating all their constitution and whatever they've written up in the way of laws. Tell us about this. What is she's taken this matter to what they call the African Court, or the East African Court. Could you explain what she's acting on?
Yeah. So she was, as you know, she wanted to run in 2010, but she ended up serving some time for terrorism and spreading rumors and, you know, intended to incite the public to rise, and a whole range of bogus arrestation, for which she received 8 years in first instance. And then the Supreme Court in Rwanda increased that sentence to 15 years. She was then released in 2018 following the grant of a presidential pardon. By that time, she had been detained for 8 years, and five of which were spent in solitary confinement.
Yeah, solitary confinement for five, right?
Yeah.
Oh, man. With her head shaved?
Probably, yeah.
They seem to be sadistic.
Your hair is your main concern when you're in solitary confinement. But yeah, that appears to be the case, that they shave the prisoners there. So she's out. Then she's out on very strict conditions that she's still a prisoner of Rwanda in a way. She cannot leave the country without the authorization of Mr. Kagame himself. And then here comes a new election for which she, yes, would like to run again. Apparently, she has not learned her lesson the first time around. And because she was convicted, she needs first to be rehabilitated. And you can be rehabilitated after 5 years of your sentence. And I remind you that it was 8. So she applied for rehabilitation, and the decision, the court there came up with a crazy decision denying her rehabilitation. So it is that decision that was taken before the East African Court of Justice because they did not respect their own laws. And that decision was issued in March 2024. And we were then in contact. And, of course, I cannot practice in East Africa. So we found lawyers in Nairobi that were willing to take the case up before that court, and which they did. So we worked together in an application. And this is the application that was filed on her behalf. A few weeks ago.
Well, now, of course, this is rather urgent because the election is scheduled for July, right?
Yeah, and the problem is that in parallel to our taking an application before the court, the state parties, including Rwanda and Kenya, have decided to stop funding. So this is a court where, even when the matter are of extreme urgency, that sometimes there are just no judges to hear you. And this is the difficulty we are running into at this stage.
There are other nasty parts of the treatment of her. I don't know if the African court is considering this, but it's really important to mention that they don't permit her to travel. She can't leave the country.
So her husband was very, very ill. She was denied permission to go visit him. Her family lives in Holland, and all her requests to go visit them and see them have been not denied, but just left unanswered. So So she has no passport. She has no way to leave the country. So that's why I said earlier on that, you know, she was released from prison, but she remained in a larger prison, which is effectively the state of Rwanda.
Yeah, virtually a kind of house arrest, as we call it.
A wide country arrest, if you want.
Yeah. By the way, she's written a really important article. People should go to it, foreignpolicy.com, where she's saying, well, we were promised a democratic society, and it isn't happening. And also she's worried about even Rwanda's relations with its neighbors because of the system is so autocratic that they're now developing problems with Congo, Burundi, some with Tanzania and other neighbors, well, Uganda. And they really need a democratic development. They need other voices, right?
Absolutely. It's been since the genocide of 1994, it's been a one party, one man ruling that place, yeah. with a very, very sad history of extrajudicial killings and repression and intimidation. It's a terrible system, really.
Mm-hmm. I suppose we should probably mention unfolded because she had not been in Rwanda at the time of the war genocide, and she was a Rwandan citizen. She returned, and they immediately, because she didn't repeat sort of the formula out of the mouth of Paul Kagame about how to characterize the events of 1994, what was it that she said that drove them, caused them to accuse her of so-called genocide ideology?
Yeah, yeah. Well, it was twofold. Huh? There was phony, completely fabricated accusations of terrorism and link with some terrorist group in Congo. But there was also the fact that when she went to the genocide memorial in Kigali, and she paid tribute to all the victims of the genocide without specifically referring to the Tutsis. And that was not taken lightly by the authorities, and that now, if you're in Rwanda, is denying the genocide. But this is just, the examples are just out of this world. I did a case in Canada about the Rwandan genocide, and the guy Mungwari was acquitted, and some witnesses came forward and admitted that the charges against him were fabricated. Yet the defense witnesses, who had the courage to denounce that and to say that this man was innocent, were prosecuted after the trial for denying the genocide. Mm-hmm. So the denying the genocide in Rwanda now is anything that actually runs a full, you know, the line of the party. You're just if you talk against the RPF, which narrative includes some notion that they stopped the genocide and salvage the country, then you are denying the genocide effectively. That's what happened.
Once you have a system that intimidates witnesses, you can throw courts out the window. I mean, that's a nasty. You were in, of course, this was in a Canadian court. You won this case, right?
Yes.
What case was that, by the way?
Mungwarere.
Uh-huh.
Jacques Mungwarere.
And you were able to show that witnesses had been intimidated, right?
I had admissions by witnesses that they were coerced into making false accusations against Mungwarere. Some witnesses, then, and the whole community, it's actually quite sad because the whole community was under the manipulations of the central authorities about the fact that they needed to come and make false accusations against Mungwarere. And those that didn't, after the trial, were indeed prosecuted for denying the genocide. So completely, this is a country where the cynical RPF, you know, the authorities are instrumentalizing the genocide to achieve their end, which is to remain in power and continue to loot the neighboring countries. So genocide is now used as a way of marginalizing and excluding people from civil life and all sorts of crazy ways. But it's also, when you look at it, for example, in Canada, what's the Mugwai was an art teacher, okay? He was no big, prominent person or influential person. So it's just some sort of PR operation whereby they maintained the Canadian authorities on their toes and, you know, can put pressure on them because they are sheltering dangerous genocide. It was just like, for your information, in that case, there were mock genocide associations that were created there was a mock genocide association that was created in Windsor, Ontario, and that was writing angry letters to MPs and the Canadian government and the RCMP and the rest of it, denouncing the fact that there was a notorious genocidaire living in Canada, when in fact it was established that the guy never participated in the genocide. He was an innocent victim of the RPF, and it's crazy manipulations of public opinion
that seems to me an example of this new topic that there are also Canadian politicians are interested in, the foreign interference in the internal affairs of Canada, that people can come here and organize campaigns to smear people and put their lives in danger, really on the direction of a foreign state.
Yeah, well, that's foreign interference for you. When you fabricate a genocide case, Canada spent millions of dollars investigating and trying that case, which was based on fabricated evidence. So it is both at the level of Mugwai, his life is destroyed forever, and at the level of the Canadian authorities, this is foreign interference, and we know that Rwanda has done far more than that in Canada. There were spies in Quebec, and we've seen reports from other cases and other instances where Rwanda intervened here, spied, and intimidated people.
Isn't this part of our problem in being able to defend people like Victoria Omahosi and even get at the truth, is that she, for example, is pretty much blacked out in Western media, yet it's acknowledged, if you think about it, who's the opposition to Kagame? It comes down to her, because so many have died who were in opposition.
Well, beheaded,
been
died.
Murdered.
Yeah, murdered. It's just they don't. It's a very dangerous thing to oppose Kagame and the RPF, as you rightly point out.
Yeah, but also Canada has made a big investment in characterizing this leadership as modern and reforming and breath of fresh air and et cetera, when it's absurd. But if they make that kind of political commitment, it can affect what happens in a courtroom, right?
Yeah. They're blind to that. They're blinded to the reality of the Canadian authorities are completely blind to the reality of what's happening in Rwanda, and they're willfully or recklessly, I don't know, but they are ignoring what, and they know, because you can get secret human rights reports circulating within the Department of Foreign Affairs in Canada, where they're fully aware that this is a one-man show going on for the last 30 years, but they prefer to ignore that for what? Is it genocide sort of guilt, which goes back to what I was saying, by these very effective PR operations, maintain the Canadian government on its guard, and they don't dare criticize the leadership, the current leadership of Rwanda.
Yeah. We're speaking to Philippe Larochelle, who's part of the defense team for Victoire Ingabire Umuhoza, and there's an election coming in July, and if you could just reprise that, will you get a response from the court?
No, we are trying. As I said, they have like the problem now. It's a problem getting a judge, and we're pushing hard to get a response for the registry and from the court. But they're underfunded. They have no teeth, so it's very difficult to. Mm. And as you know, Rwanda has withdrawn from the African Court of Human Rights.
Yes, they quit when they got endangered.
Exactly, which would have been a natural avenue to pursue the claim, but thanks. The East African Court of Justice, although it's mainly dealing with customs business, also has a preamble which states that the countries forming part of it have to respect human rights and the rule of law. So they have been agreeable to hear matters, including against Rwanda, dealing with human rights issues. So that's why the court is competent, but the problem is that it's not equipped with a proper personal and judges and availability to deal with a matter of to deal with it as a matter of urgency. So we filed for it. We're waiting for the response of Rwanda, but we're pushing hard in our dealings with the registry to get the attention of the judge as soon as possible.
Well, I hope that more people will hear about this, and because it seems to me if they withdrew from the walked out on the East African Court, that should be a signal to Canada that it should downgrade or break off relations with a country that's not going to respect a higher court.
Look, you want to hear about that? When they sent my client Mugesera back to Rwanda, Rwanda had to provide diplomatic guarantees that they would respect human rights and all. And as part of their guarantees, they said that their membership in the African Court of Human Rights was ensuring that human rights would be respected in the country. They had no shame withdrawing from that court, even if they tried to reassure Canada that they were a human rights abiding country. You know, so they lack no cynicism. These people are just do what they please and wish.
Well, thanks to your work and to Victoria Ngabire, they are being exposed, and what a heroic person. Philippe,
yes,
La Rochelle, right. We're so grateful you talked to us, and we look forward to speaking to you again. And good luck with your for Victoire.
Thanks. No problem.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Data Report, CIT, 89.5 FM. I don't know if we have a little more Bob Dylan to torture with. it's actually a great song. So, and then we'll come back.